Hello, just a little disclaimer up top. We recorded this episode a little early, always a mistake. We wrapped up on Saturday night just when the story was coming out that KPCC LAist reporter Josie Huang had been arrested by the LA Sheriff's Department for allegedly interfering with an arrest while reporting a story. That allegedly by Sunday went away pretty fast. She showed video from her cell phone showing that she had not been interfering with an arrest. They hadn't been giving her any chance to back away from the scene before they arrested her and threw her to the ground. Sheriff's Department also lied and said that she had not identified herself as a reporter when she clearly did on the video repeatedly, and also that she wasn't wearing identification, which she was on a lanyard. Josie's one of the best reporters in the city. She's done incredible coverage of the protests over the last few months, and she has covered her own story in this case just as well as all of the others, and it's been great seeing all the journalists in the city rally to her defense. On with the show.
Hell, is it paradise? And will we make it worse or make it nice? What's the forecast in LA? Do a podcast in LA.
It's Monday, September the 14th. This is LA Podcast. I'm Scott Frazier here with Hayes Davenport and Alyssa Walker. We are doing a late night recording session, so I mean, these tend to be fun, at least for us. I feel like, how are you guys doing?
Symptoms, what do we got? How are your bodies reacting to
anxiety,
the smoke?
I feel like I can feel my skin tingling.
Interesting.
Is that, like,
that's
just
an interesting one,
an imagined response?
I don't have the skin tingles. My eyes burn when I close them.
Okay.
My membranes are inflamed. And the stuff coming out of my nose is black.
Okay. So none of those are COVID symptoms, at least.
No, I don't think I have COVID. I mean, I haven't left the house in a very long time. So I think it's unlikely that I have COVID. I think it's probably the huge fire, the fact that the sky is filled with smoke. Those are very consistent with that
smoke with ozone inhalation. Yeah, I mean, sure. I guess I'm trying to look on the bright side and say at least you don't have to worry about the is it COVID or is it something else anxiety, which is also fun. My big symptom right now is actually like just chest pain.
Cool.
Cool. I have tight chest. Yeah. For sure.
I mean, just kind of like on the right side of my chest, my muscles just feel like they've been cranking extra hard to get a little bit of oxygen out of the air.
That's fun because that could be COVID or smoke inhalation or
exactly
a psychosomatic reaction to either of those things or to something else.
Yeah, I know. And this is, in my life, this is actually the most common thing for it to be is a psychosomatic reaction.
Well, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on.
Let's talk about the fire in the sky.
Smoke on the water.
Yeah. I mean, we should like listen back to episodes from like 2 or 3 weeks ago, honestly, and be like, God, remember the good old days?
Remember when we said that these would break into the top 10 and now they're the fires, none around here, but in Northern California are in the top five with number 1, 3, and 4?
One, 3, and 4. Alyssa, you texted us that earlier. With the first, third, and fourth largest fires in California state history, records for which extend back to the early 1930s, I believe, are all burning at the same time now. And the largest one is not one that was even on our radar last time that we really talked about the historic nature of this fire season so far. Not only that, that largest fire, the August fire in Northern California, the August complex fire in Northern California, is larger than the third and fourth, which are two complex fires also in Northern California. If you put those two together, they would not be as large as the now largest, which is nearing 900,000 acres in Northern California. It is staggering. And that's before you get into the fact that there are also fires raging throughout the entire western United States, and the smoke from that seems to entirely be blowing, well, mostly to Oregon and the Bay Area, but we're definitely getting our maybe our share of it down
and
here.
Up in Oregon and much farther north is where they've had now starting to have like significant death from these fires, where
right.
most of California has been spared from that, luckily. Yeah, the sky. Alyssa, you are a connoisseur of writing on this subject. You just love reading everything you can about how the sky looks weird and that kind of stuff.
Everybody had to publish their "What is an orange sky?" Mm-hmm. What did I do wrong to arrive at the orange sky moment in time? The orange sky is the future. The orange sky is the past. The orange sky is climate action. It's not climate action. You know, we've got the whole. The best ones were like the ones that were like tagging Nancy Pelosi and being like, "Oh, you don't want the green dream or whatever? Would you rather have an orange sky?" Mm-hmm. Those were good. It's clever.
I don't think she has even posted. It's a green dream.
But then we did have like the most amazing press. I think surpassing orange sky was Gray Gavin, Ashen Gavin.
Yeah.
In the forest with his photo op, because he was like, "I'm not going to be upstaged by this orange sky," with his like jacket on with a little bear embroidered on it, and he was like tramping through the forest,
facing away from the camera, staring down the fire, getting ready to run in there and kick its ass.
And then he
directed by David Lynch. That was Twin Peaks season 4, Gavin Newsom.
Where the pine forest has burnt down in Twin Peaks. And it was, he had some quotables where, you know, it was like, "Don't change your light bulbs, change your leaders." And everyone's like, "Yeah." Mm-hmm. And then he signed, I mean, this is notable. This was good. He signed the bill that I think we talked about. Did we talk about it in our legislative roundup?
Which one?
Where firefighters are allowed.
No, that had not firefighters been signed at that point.
Yeah. So he signed the bill saying that if you were an incarcerated firefighter, you can go work. They'll expunge your record and you can actually go fight fires,
if
which
they
should have
let
happened a
you,
long time ago.
If justice,
if they, if, yes,
if, in the name of justice, you are permitted.
Right.
So
right,
it is
right.
a whole process and you still get paid, I believe, $2 a day, maybe $2 an hour to fight those fires while you're doing it. But yes, you're now eligible to have your record expunged and to get a job as a firefighter if they feel like it. Can I express my appreciation to, I mean, a lot of people pointed this out, but to Mike Bonin, who a few hours ago was pointing out that Gavin Newsom, despite a lot of promises to the contrary, has increased drilling permits.
Yes, significantly. Like, he has allowed fracking permits unprecedented. Well, yeah. I mean, Jerry Brown probably wasn't going to do that. Jerry Brown didn't do as much as he should have for this. But yeah, it's been kind of under the radar. And it's been another good Gavin meme, Gray Gavin. I'm just making that. I don't know if that's a good thing to call it. But like Fire Gavin. It's better than Rug Gavin. I don't know.
I mean, it's almost unprecedented by default, right? Like, this is an industry that didn't exist like in large numbers a decade or more ago. And Jerry Brown did allow some fracking and declined to put strong restrictions on the ability of fracking activities to take place in the state of California. But yeah, Gavin Newsom has gone in and dramatically expanded fracking in California as he is doing his circuit on your liberal aunt's Facebook feed and doing his like climate change is real tweets. Like,
after promising
we need
to shut down Aliso Canyon, not doing that, opening it back up.
Still open. Open. Yeah.
It's so gross. It's really depressing. What better time? Like, I don't know who it is, But like people in legislation, if they care about this, now is the time to advance this stuff. Of course, the legislative session is over, as we talked about a couple weeks ago. But like,
yep,
it's now is the time to not just be talking about this, but to push something through at the city level. Now is the time. Mike Bonham was also tweeting tonight about the Stand LA setbacks and like shutting down urban oil drills. This week is the week to put that legislation out there again and dare them to not sign it. The air is going to continue to be really bad the day you're listening to this. It's horrible. There are, oh, Alyssa, you've been talking a lot about air respite centers.
Yeah, what do we call them? There was a sign outside of a place in San Francisco or Oakland, one of the Bay Area cities, where it literally said, there was a sign outside that said breathing center. And I was like, that's what we just actually need to call them, because you could
imagine that just like enters our lexicon. That,
yeah, like, it could affect your breathing.
Hey, you're on your way to the breathing center?
Weather. Yeah, so we've got...
I mean, how much more dramatically could we change the like normal state of living by the time we get to the end of the year?
So we've got...
I do, sorry, I want to stop on this for one second.
I'm laughing back at you.
7 months ago, you just like get a little glimpse ahead to like every like the future. The sky is a completely different color. Everyone is walking around in masks.
Yeah.
The NBA has fans on a screen watching from their homes. And now we have something called a breathing center.
But at least the Lakers.
And, I mean, you're always just like going to the playoffs. Why do sci-fi movies always just assume that everything is going to be a different hue in the future?
Yeah.
And now you get it.
Now you get it. But that future was a completely different. Everybody was posting the Blade Runner stuff. The Blade Runner of this year was supposed to be, the atmosphere was supposed to have a lot more rain. So I'm not sure if that future is
this
accurate.
Is more like 2049.
This is the 2049 future we've already advanced to. So I guess we're really screwed. Yes, when I was reporting a story earlier this week about the heat wave and what went wrong, you know, we talked a lot about, I think we recorded this and then we hit and surpassed the record that we thought we would maybe get close to in Woodland Hills, 121 degrees on Sunday. And I was just looking into things like the cooling center response and how could we have anticipated this might be an issue, even with the pandemic. I looked back in some of the city's plans, and like, turns out that it's mentioned in the county sustainability plan. It's mentioned in the, not just the city sustainability plan, but also the Resilient LA report that came out in 2018. As you remember, that was a huge wildfire year. That was really terrifying. So we knew that extreme heat would be a problem, obviously, like going back to the 2006 very deadly heat wave, which and the last one was very similar to, but also that we knew that fires would be a problem, that we would have more acres burning closer to Los Angeles, and that people would maybe need to get out of these, you know, the ash flurries that are raining down upon us. And also just like you said, like it feels, if you're outside for like, even inside your house, you can smell like smoke, you can smell smoke. And then you step outside and you really take a deep breath and you can really kind of feel it. So imagine that's what those AQI indexes are for. Like, the number over 200 means like anyone who is outside for 24 hours will suffer health impacts. Like, that's just a given. So if you're outside, anything that's over, you know, the colors are the kind of going red into purple, that means that's pretty bad. So we had an opportunity to plan ahead for this. And it was really interesting talking to some of the folks who've been working on this. If you know, give everybody an air conditioner, give everybody an air purifier, there's all sorts of things that like have been discussed, but have not been part of this heat action plan that we have not put together yet. The county just voted on like a report back to do one, but the city doesn't have one. And there are groups like Climate Resolve has set up this like test of what's called a resiliency hub, which would be, and they're testing it in Boyle Heights right now, where it's like a place where you could go if your house didn't work for whatever need you know, or if you didn't have a house, whatever you needed to do your basic you know, day-to-day activities at, you could go to these places where you could do laundry, you could take a shower, you could breathe clean air, you could do all these things. So we should have those set up. We knew this was happening. And the pandemic doesn't really affect it that much, because if you had one of these in every neighborhood where it was accessible to people and they knew they could go there and they knew where they were in the same place every time, open at the same, you know, hours, this would be set up. And this is part of climate action, and we haven't done it. So it was really disappointing, again, as we saw these air forecasts rolling in. I thought for sure after this heat wave and everybody yelling at our elected officials that, like, at least Herb Wesson would be like, I'm opening up the Crenshaw Mall, which he did last Sunday, as I think after we recorded, we didn't talk about it since the malls are closed and there's no kind of informal place to escape. So nothing happened. Nothing has happened as of Saturday night as when we're recording this. And it's hard to just assume that they don't care.
The inaction is like staggering, right? Like there's the amount of time that it would take to put together a response to something like this, if you intended on responding to it, what, like a couple of hours? It's baffling that not only have they done nothing, they've also given no indication that they've even heard requests to do something.
But this is how low our standards are, where, I mean, we were talking about this last week. We're saying, like, open up the cooling centers, of which there are 5 as of last weekend, 115 spaces, like occupancy of 115, not including the Crenshaw Mall. So this was interesting to me. Herb Wesson announced, like, hey, we opened this place up as a cooling center today. And it's like, who did you tell?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's good. That's like the best space by far that they've utilized for this purpose. It's huge, and malls are built to be cold and for people to like get out of the heat. But it wasn't listed on the city's emergency cooling center list. So, yeah.
Which, I mean, I feel like that's a really important point, too, because it suggests something that is, again, important as we continue to face heat waves, as we continue to face bad air quality days, which we know we're going to be seeing even more of as time goes on, thanks again to the leadership of our city elected officials. But something that I feel like always happens is city council members plead they say that they're not able to do certain things. They say that things extend beyond their power. In the case of like opening something like a cooling center rapidly, most of the largest places and spaces in Los Angeles are private, and they would say, we don't have the ability to do this. But then look at Herb Wesson getting a private space, the Crenshaw Mall, open. Apparently getting it open on such short notice that they didn't even have enough time to put it on the website the day of the heat wave. That's how little time it took them to do this. They have a lot of power. They choose not to wield it for the benefit of people who need them to wield it on their behalf. But the excuses that they can't do something are almost always pure bullshit.
There are also probably, I mean, dozens of hotels in LA that are sitting completely empty. And if you were to open those up, even as cooling centers, they'd have 4 or 5 times the occupancy of every cooling center that was open last weekend on the hottest day of the year. So this is like, my fear is like, if our demand to our elected officials is something as cheap and easy as open the cooling centers as breathing centers, like, I don't want to get to the point where like that happens and we're like, yay. And then they go to people who are homeless in the area. Maybe they tell them this is happening. Much more likely they don't. They just open the doors and like say they did it. But then people who live on the street are like, what do I do with my stuff? And they're like, well, you're not going to bring it in here. That's for sure. And then people don't move. You know, it's like, even the stuff that we're asking for is so feeble.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get credit for, as an elected official, you don't get credit just for showing up. And I feel like that is, generally speaking, what protests have been aimed at over the course of, before COVID, over the course of the past several years. People have been saying, our elected officials are not showing up for the job. Opening cooling centers qualifies as showing up when cooling centers are needed. Opening places for people to breathe breathable air when that's needed qualifies as showing up. Don't expect a big parade. They always do, just because you're doing the absolute bare minimum as opposed to doing less than the bare minimum. That's really not an acceptable standard, but it's always the one they hope to be held to.
So like we won't emergency house people in a pandemic that would disproportionately kill people who have been living outside because of the conditions they face. We wouldn't house people because of a record-breaking heat wave that would be during a pandemic when your health is already compromised and you're trying to stay away from people because you are trying to survive the pandemic and you're living outside. And now we also won't house people when you are breathing toxic air during a pandemic that affects your respiratory system and a heat wave is coming next week again. So we've already, if there's no hope now, I don't, but I guess if there was an earthquake, which is a different kind of emergency that would somehow trigger some different plan, then there'd be shelters set up all over the city for people who had had their houses destroyed by the earthquake. I mean, right? That it's not like they would be like, no, we're not going to do that.
They would certainly open the rec center.
They would put the people in the hotels who didn't have homes anymore. If your home burned down in a fire, would they put you in a hotel?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
So what's the difference?
And what's the difference is that you owned a home.
It was your fault for becoming homeless.
I mean, that was a rhetorical question, but yes.
It was your fault for becoming homeless. It wasn't your fault that you moved into an area that burns to the ground every 5 years.
Bad choice of home, but you had one, so right, yeah.
And I mean, just to return briefly to what we were talking about last week, I mean, the deployment of the rhetoric of like fire safety to avoid building new housing units in dense urban areas. I mean, all of rural Western America is currently on fire. Right. So that's bullshit. You need to get people into urban places. Silver Lake's not going to catch on fire. There are plenty of one bedroom houses here that could be converted into more housing than that, and it would be a good thing, and people would be at less risk of all of their belongings burning down.
Just want to point out something again that sort of flew under the radar, and we should have talked about more. But we talked about last year, an average of 3 people every day died on the street or died homeless in LA, and Barbara Ferrer, the head of the county department of public health, announced about a week ago that we have already reached that number of the number of people who died on the street last year. We've hit it in the first week of September.
Yep.
So, and we have 4 months to go. So that could be due to a number of factors, like worsened conditions, more people dying who are homeless, but also a huge increase in people who are living on the street. Could be a combination of those two things. Either way, it's like astoundingly bleak, and for that number to rise by potentially an entire digit, that average in 1 year is like too shocking to even really think about.
And to there's a very real possibility at this point in time, you know, we are what, 8 weeks out from the election, 7 weeks out from the election at this point in time, there's a very real possibility that our mayor, the person who has overseen this complete disaster, not only is he not going to mention it, he might go on to oversee the federal government agency tasked with overseeing the national response to homelessness.
I think he's going to be like, oh, you remember how I tried to ask for federal help and we never got it? This is how I'm going to get help for Los Angeles. I swear that's what he's going to say.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that is what he will say.
Do you want to mention an area where we're doing well? Our pandemic numbers continue to improve. There are now 877, as of Saturday, 877 people hospitalized. The number just continues to drop. Deaths, cases, like basically everything is declining. That could be for a lot of different reasons. A lot of people have gotten the virus in L.A., so we might just be experiencing a similar trend to what happened in New York, Massachusetts, like New Jersey, many other places that where a lot of people got it. And then the people that were sheltering in place basically the whole time are still doing that. And so, like, the people that were exposed to risk, either because they were forced to go to work or because they didn't take it seriously, have either are just more likely to have gotten it at this point. So, but it's still, I mean, it's a very positive thing. Were we to be enduring the peak of the pandemic in this moment, I mean, I don't know
how anyone would handle it.
It is
very good news. And it is, I mean, it's a sign that the things that we knew would work are working. At this point in time, we're still at the like highest level of vigilance according to the state reopening plan. However, I think we are on a good trajectory at this point with hospitalizations being down. Obviously, that's not a direct input into the reopening numbers anymore, but we are trending in a positive direction, and I think that we can expect that will continue.
We talked last week about the shooting by LA Sheriff's deputies of Dijon Kazee in the Westmont area of LA County in South LA. Scott, you were doing some field reporting there earlier tonight. Talk about the protests that have been ongoing and some of the stuff that happened this week and what you saw.
So I went down to basically every single day since Dijon Kazee was killed, there have been protests originating in the area of 109th and Budlong in Westmont, where he was shot and killed by sheriff's deputies, and proceeding from there to the South Los Angeles Sheriff's Station, which is right near the intersection of Normandy and Imperial. So I went down to the protest today, which had been organized by family members of Dijon's and by some of the community leaders in and around the area. And first thing I noticed was that you can't get anywhere near the sheriff's station. Basically you have to go around from El Segundo Boulevard, Normandy, because the sheriffs from both directions were trying to block protesters from actually getting to the South Los Angeles station. I believe that is a tactic that has become relatively common for them. In speaking with some other protesters, they kind of indicated that they were expecting that today. The way that they have blocked off the streets is they have this big, what appears to be like sort of a for military use roadblock that is deployable barbed wire, something like that.
Yeah, it was like a broken slinky.
Yeah, it looked like a giant yellow slinky. Yeah. They also had...
Was it sharp? Was it like a... It wouldn't hurt you if you ran through it. Or maybe it was like electric.
I was pretty close to it and I could not tell. It conceivably would have been pretty sharp. It was definitely a sizable impediment. It was like chest height, I feel like, to some of the sheriff's deputies.
So like, if you ran, it would like tangle you up like a slinky.
I don't know.
You would be stopped like cartoons.
It looked unpleasant. It looked in particular to me like something that you would put up at a military outpost. We kind of have been talking about the way that the sheriff's department has been employing a siege mentality seems to have continued. There was, I think, a crowd of several hundred people when I was there. The crowd had taken over that intersection I was talking about at Normandy and Imperial Highway, and remained there for, I think, a couple, maybe like an hour and a half or more. And there were a number of speeches given. Basically, there was no way to get in front of the sheriff's station and actually direct the concerns at the sheriff's deputies, which of course has been done in previous nights and has resulted in the sheriff's employing very violent tactics against peaceful protesters, legal observers, and members of the press. So from that point in time, the march turned around and went back to Westmont, where the rally continued. It's on the one hand, it's heartening seeing so many people continue to come out, you know, day in, day out for Dijon Kazee in South Los Angeles. The sheriff has been all over, in particular, social media and in the press this past week, saying that the protests are not actually indicative of feeling in the South Los Angeles community, and that the protesters are outside agitators from across state lines. And
always with this.
Oh,
and then always a few weeks later, the actual report comes out and they're like, oh, no, sorry, we're all from
LA.
Here,
yeah.
From this. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so they were saying that they arrested a bunch of people and most of them were not from the immediate Westmont area. Of course, Los Angeles is huge. And also, I mean, as to the claims that people in Westmont are happy with the way in which their community is being policed and they want to see the protesters leave and go home, there seems to be less than no evidence for that. I mean, Alex Villanueva is not keyed in to the community feeling in these neighborhoods. I mean, he was like viciously slandering the community in print just within the course of the past week or so. So for him to turn around and say like, hey, yeah, no, people in Westmont really like us and they'd actually like it if the protesters would stop coming here and bothering them doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, this neighborhood that he called Death Alley.
This neighborhood that he called Death Alley, that he referred to as, you know, that place where so many murders take place. Yeah. It's clear that he does not care about the community of people who live there, and has no real attachment to or like feeling for what exactly is going on. Sara Suleiman of Streets Blog pointed out on Twitter that he had a press conference in which he invited somebody from the surrounding area who is like a literal white supremacist and like posts white supremacist things repeatedly, and had her come up and talk about how much she hated Black Lives Matter and how Black Lives Matter was like killing God or whatever. So an interesting choice of allies. I was particularly heartened by what I saw today, although I mean it's clear what a strain this is on so many people who live in this area. It's clear, you know, there's so much pain that so many people have, and it expresses itself so differently. There are people who have, you know, like there are people who spoke today who have lost loved ones to police violence and have been out protesting every week with Black Lives Matter for years now. And then there are people who like are just afraid that they're going to be next or their loved ones are going to be next. But I mean, the overwhelming atmosphere is one of pain, underscored by the fact that like it physically hurts to be out there breathing that air right now, right? Like and it's really horrible, but it's also, you know, the fact that people don't stop showing up under these conditions when they are being shot by rubber bullets, when they're being gassed, when the sheriffs are trying to put the maximum amount of distance between themselves and any attempt to bring them to accountability is ultimately what I find heartening, I guess.
Yeah, the policies of obstruction and antagonism continued to come out of Villanueva's office in the sheriff's department this week. They once again put a hold on the autopsy for Dijon Kazee, exactly what they did with Andres Guardado after his killing by a sheriff's deputy. They sent a lot of heavily armed deputies to a completely peaceful rally, saying that a business owner had requested that they show up. Really, basically a memorial. There was nothing, like, people weren't even like yelling really at this rally. And so let's talk about what happened tonight. In Compton, two sheriff's deputies were shot and are currently, as we record this on Saturday night, are in the hospital in critical condition. I don't think it's safe to assume that this is related to what happened in Westmont. They're like 20 minutes apart. But from the video that the sheriff's department has already released, this happened like an hour and a half ago, and the video is already out. Somebody just ran up on this sheriff's vehicle and just shot into it. And so it does by appearance on the video, it does appear to have been just a targeted, attempted murder of sheriff's deputies. This is awful for a number of reasons. The human cost, the potential for increased violence. Like, this is how you get law enforcement militarization. They don't say, oh, no, like, we better, like, slow down now. Like, this is when it gets really, really bad. People thought it was bad when the pro-Trump guy was killed in Portland, and that would lead to increased violence. No, like, the shooting of sheriff's deputies will really lead to a huge increase in enforcement and militarization and all the stuff that has, this cycle will continue because of stuff like this.
I mean, at the same time, I was out there before this happened, and they're out there with like a police vehicle with basically like again this like riot fencing on it, like in case they needed to ram through some sort of large scale barricade. They're basically already using battlefield tactics on the ground out there. I agree with you. Like, there's always the potential for escalation to make the situation worse, particularly for people who are living in these communities in Compton, where we know that there are allegations that the entire sheriff's department is run by a clique of people who really expressly valorize the murder of private citizens. It's frightening. And Donald Trump's FBI has already weighed in, saying that they are going to extend resources to the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department for their manhunt, which is concerning, I would say. At the same time, there was another, I'm sorry, did you mention the other Compton shooting that happened?
I don't think we talked about it.
Yeah, like, So 2 days ago, there was another shooting by deputies out of Compton Station. I mean,
I believe that's the steady drum since George Floyd was murdered.
The steady drumbeat is just like the continuous press of Compton Station gangs, more witnesses to these gang tattoos, more witnesses to the behavior of the so-called Compton executioners, and now yet another dead person in their patrolling jurisdiction, who I'm pretty sure that we don't have a name or an identified individual who actually was killed by them at this point in time. That is a very tense situation down there that I cannot be surprised that there are like people who feel that extremely about it, and I feel very frightened for what comes next. And I mean, in particular, as far as the retribution that an organization like the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department is capable of is very frightening.
And you think about like why this happens. You have, I mean, it's like a few different things. The way Sheriff Villanueva talked, like, how do you defuse something like this? When this shooting happens, if you're in charge of this department, you could say something like, this is horrific every time it happens. And if we find out from our investigation that these deputies acted in any way out of propriety, like, they'll be charged and they'll go to jail. But the sheriff operates under the assumption that they were innocent, always. Always.
Yeah.
And there's just, and all evidence is slow walked, it's covered up, and goes hand in hand, I think, with People City Council Twitter account that was posting these TikToks earlier tonight of a sheriff's deputy.
Yeah.
Where he sets like Enter Sandman to the like suiting up with riot gear and like racking their beanbag shotguns and like riding in their tanks, and like the image of like a graphic that said like Battle of South LA. Like, this is how they've always thought of this place, now potentially like manifesting if they are now actually being targeted and shot at by people that live there. It feeds into this incredibly dangerous dynamic. This is how you get to 92. Yeah. Like, this is how you get to 65. Like, and in both of those cases, it wasn't just one thing that set it off. It was a bunch of circumstances like this in a row. And so, I mean, I don't know. It feels familiar from what I wasn't there, but from what I know about led up to those times. Breaking news, smoke relief centers will be open from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. tomorrow, Sunday. So as you're listening, as we're recording this on Saturday night, we're just finding out that they're opening. There are four completely new places. The South L.A. Sports Activity Center on Figueroa, the Branford Child Care Center in Arleta, the Lemon Grove Recreation Center, and the Glass L Recreation Center on Verdugo.
Okay, so someone just sent that to me. I don't know who sent that to you at that moment. I was screen grabbing it because I didn't know if it was going to go away as we're covering this breaking news. Because it's not, where is the news getting out? Someone just sent me like a...
Someone texted me.
Yeah, that, I mean, where is this information?
It's getting...
Is this somewhere...
Tactically is this somewhere distributed, we... I guess.
We could maybe tell people, maybe an emergency alert could go out to let people know.
It's getting distributed to two out of the three.
Sorry, oh, are you hurt?
Podcast, but
we're on these
by,
on
by
these
somebody
private.
Who doesn't realize yeah. that we yeah. drop our episodes
like,
on
at
Monday.
This,
not
at that
on
exact
Sunday.
Moment, Hayes, that I'm like, I'm taking a screen grab of this because I don't know where it's going to come from. But let's look at the, let me just look really quick. Let's look at the emergency. Let's look at the cities where the cooling centers.
Those four are all in
City of LA. Okay, it's up where the, and the cooling centers in the county are open and some other cities already, they were open. Let's see if it's on the county page just real fast. This is your live reporting.
But I don't think any of those were cooling centers. Maybe, no.
I think the child care center was in Arleta, but definitely not the other two. Maybe the South LA one. Definitely the Lemon Grove and Glass L were both not cooling centers that I can remember. Wow. Well.
And so I just want to point out, this is why I wanted to preface that this is the weakest possible shit and this is not to be celebrated. This is the absolute bare minimum. And it's actually less than the number of cooling centers that we had open last weekend. And I assume the fact that they are now using these as distance learning facilities has complicated matters even more. Can we talk about Citizen?
Oh, yes.
Alyssa, I would love for you to talk about this. I Citizen for like a couple weeks was the thing that like people would talk about. Like, it was like, did you like download this thing? And like like everyone's stabbing each other in my neighborhood. I had no idea. Scott, you described it as Gab next door.
Yeah, I think my exact term was Gab for next door psychopaths. People who are, like the adrenaline hit that they get from going on next door and posting about a black person is worn off. Yeah, they need a stronger high.
So, I mean, you know, you summed it up really well. I don't think there's really anything else for me to
add. There's a little more.
It is.
Yeah, there's somewhat more. You had a really great video you found. Actually, you had a really good thread in general about Citizen.
Thank you. Well, it's been, you know, as something that you cover when you're like a tech reporter that becomes a, you know, writing somebody who writes about cities and neighborhoods and stuff. All these apps have been like kind of in the forefront of everything that, you know, has really caused a lot of the problems in cities for the last 10 years or so. I don't know. Nextdoor was founded in like, what, 2008 or something like that. So Citizen is one of those apps because Citizen was kind of like the worst one. So these are like the app, you know, it was like the newest one to the table. And it was actually originally named Vigilante when it first started. It immediately got pulled from the App Store because it was like concerns about user safety because it was like a video game. It was like, go out and record this and stop this crime, right?
Yeah, it was like Pokemon Go.
Yeah, Pokemon Go, but for racial profiling and going in your neighborhood. So and it encourages you to like take a video of this crime, like stop this crime in progress, like help the police. And what it does is it also aggregates like 911 calls. So some people have said it's really useful because like if you wanted to know if a helicopter was going overhead or if like why the police cars were going down your street. Like, it's the only real way to know. And they really picked up on that and they kind of sold it. It's like, it's a scanner, which is like a police scanner. You're just like checking out what's going on. But I think what's really super troubling, the news of this week, is that the city of Los Angeles, the mayor that knows that distrust in the police is at an all-time high among its constituents, is partnering with Citizen for contact tracing. So this is, you've heard of like all these different apps that tons of other countries have built their own or use different, you know, tech companies have their different contact tracing apps, and it uses just basically like Bluetooth and other technology to let you know if you're close to someone else who, you know, and had a possible exposure to COVID-19. They handle like testing results. It's contact tracing is very important to, you know, combating the virus, and doing this in a way that's really smart and good is important. But partnering with a company that is literally causing potential conflicts with the people who are most at risk for contracting this disease is not just incredibly problematic, but like the most ridiculous proposition. Because if you wanted the people to protect themselves to download this app, no one will download this app. Like, no one who cares about these issues will download this app and be let themselves be traced by Citizen.
I mean, I would love to know how much money it's for. That's public, right? This partnership?
It must be. Well, you know, I'm not really sure, because the interesting thing, and I tried to find out like if others, like, you know, if other cities had done this, and they've actually built this contact tracing app and they tried to like sell it to different cities, and a lot of cities were like, no, we don't, you know, we're going to do our own or whatever. But I guess from this Wired article I wrote, enough people have signed up for Citizen in LA and New York. In LA, it's about 1 million people who are using the app already.
What?
Yeah. That all they have to do is just turn on the contact tracing. You have to download another app. It's called SafePass. So yeah. You download another
Scott,
app. But
Scott, do your line.
Oh, yeah. You're the best tweet.
Do it.
Say
it.
You really
say it.
I said the Citizen is going to take a SafePass. Was that
this Citizen is going to take a safe pass?
Yeah, I took my sunglasses off. Yeah,
yeah. So apparently in LA they have enough people using the Citizen app, so they, you know, have they've been testing like location based data.
Can I just say, when Alyssa says enough people are using the Citizen app here, she means 1 million of you freaks are using the Citizen app out of 10 million people in LA County. What is wrong with all of you?
Thank you for doing that. So now the city can partner with them. But yeah, enough people have it, so it's been able to like test location-based information, and it knows kind of when you're near somebody or near something. So they have enough data to have people download this app and have it work.
So we've studied the contact tracing data, and it turns out that roving bands of dark-skinned people are threatening white people's homes.
It's just like, and they had, this was the other thing that was, I think, just like, I mean, I don't know how in any, do they not know? Like, did the people who work for the mayor or for any of these organizations, like, do they not, did someone not pull them aside and be like, hey, like, you might want to look at like this video they made like in 2017, like where they made this like ad that's literally like a woman walking down the street and she's on her phone or whatever. And she's like, there's a guy following me. He's wearing a hoodie. I need help. You know, it's literally the worst. I think you had another really good zinger on Twitter there, Scott. You called it.
Guys, gotta just go online. I'm tapped out.
You called it George Zimmerman the app, which is exactly it. And
somebody's following me with a hoodie.
Yes.
Famously, what happened? What George Zimmerman claimed happened with Trayvon Martin before that was, you know, disproven.
But that was 4 years before. More than 4 years before,
yeah, so they,
2017. That was a distant memory at that
so,
point.
They had plenty of time to choose to make that their narrative. They included in the video.
Yeah, to Yeah. And they haven't really, they've had partnerships with the NYPD. They've done this like fun basketball game with them. They've, you know, all these apps work closely with police departments, and that's, you know, what it's all about. That's for them, is to, you know, make sure those relationships stay chummy. So they don't listen to their advisors, or no one was brave enough to actually lay it out for them, or they don't care.
We have so much more to talk about. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's true. I just want to say, like, the thing that to me is really what stands out here is that the city of LA, under Mayor Eric Garcetti in particular, for the past, I guess, 7 years at this point, has really put a focus on technological innovation and has very little to show for it. I mean, we always talk about the earthquake app that doesn't work, partnering with an app that sponsors extra legal vigilantism is not good, especially when you're trying to not, like, notionally keep people safe. The innovation record for the city of Los Angeles is piss poor, I think would be a good adjective to describe it. And it doesn't ever seem like that's going to change.
Why didn't they use the Shake Alert data for contact tracing? That's a geolocation app. Could it be that it doesn't have any function at all?
Wait, now that would be amazing. It would be like, you're coming close to someone who has... No, just kidding, you're not.
So, Ron Galper, another Ron Galperin drop this week. Ron Galperin, the city controller of LA, dropped a report showing that the cost of housing for Prop HHH, the $1.2 billion housing bond that we all voted to pass the same day that Donald Trump was elected, that has produced, I think, somewhere in the range of 180 units of housing almost 4 years later. The cost of each unit averages at $531,000 up to $746,000 per unit.
Insane.
It is a staggering cost. This is not the first time he's reported on this. And those costs will get higher because as these projects are delayed and delayed and delayed, it's the soft costs. That's what really, really racks it up. And so I think it might be time to, like, start. I mean, Nithya was talking about this for a while, but, like, start replanning some of these. Like, how do we get more out of this money now before a lot of these haven't even broken ground?
Yeah, and all the money has been committed already for HHH. So we're committing money that we haven't even broken ground for, and we won't get the same number of units. So it seems like this would be a really good time to interrupt that process and...
Let's try something else. Let's
expand
buy...
Expand it. Yeah, try... And she's always had some good alternatives, yeah.
Let's buy some of these hotels.
Or just pay to actually rent the rooms out. I mean, a friend of the show, Lex Roman at Collexity on Twitter, said that actually did some like back of the envelope math for how many people you could get housing for with the money that instead of what we're talking about, $500,000 for a unit or whatever, you could turn that into so much time spent in hotel rooms just by renting out hotel rooms. And we run into the same impasse over and over again, which is that the hotel owners don't want to rent their rooms out to homeless people, to which the answer should be shut up and take the money. It doesn't matter
what
you
want.
Who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
Who cares what you want?
Just buy them.
Yeah.
Like,
this is supposed to be like permanent housing money. And so I think you do have to at least follow up on that aspect of it and own these properties to some extent. But
yeah,
I mean, yeah, a lot of these, like it's a buyer's market for hotels right now, I assume. There's almost no way with a lot of these properties that you'd end up paying $746,000 per unit. And a lot of them do have, for supportive housing, you have certain standards that are pretty strict, some for good reasons and some for less worthy reasons. But like you need space for service providers and things like that. That can increase the cost somewhat. But this is our money. this is city money. We do not have to. Yeah. I mean, there are like ADA regulations and things like that that you have to follow. But like, you don't have to submit yourself to as many restrictions as you would normally have for this kind of spending. The rocks under the bridge. One night, a bunch of rocks appeared at the Cattaraugus, the 405 underpass at Cattaraugus and Soranoco. What is that?
South Robertson.
South Robertson in West LA, and an area that at varying times people who were homeless had lived in tents. And then one day in their place, these rocks appeared. And people wondered where these rocks came from, what their purpose was. And then people discovered a GoFundMe from a local resident to raise money explicitly, basically, to put these rocks under the bridge so people who are homeless could not occupy that space anymore. It, of course, it is a screenwriter who wrote a bunch of movies 30 years ago.
Why is it of course?
I just test this sometime. Go on Nextdoor and the people who are complaining about homelessness, Google them, and the first entry will be an IMDb. And the last entry in it will be 2002. I swear. Like this.
They should use this information to like do like pre-crime intervention to just go to these people's houses and be like, are you planning attacks against homeless people?
Every single time that turns out to be true. So it was W. Peter Iliff is the writer of the movie Point Break and Varsity Blues. Unfortunately, I like both of these movies. We're going to end up watching Point Break for our bonus show, where we watch every LA movie.
And I mean, he did a great job writing Point Break. He had to find some way to spend the cachet that he built up from
And
that.
So, boy, when people figured this out, it was a lot of different... This was a real team effort from a lot of different groups that work in homeless activism. First, people called in to a South Robertson neighborhood council meeting to rightfully complain about this. Herb Wesson got involved, said, this will not stand. I'll take care of this. And then a bunch of people went out with shovels and just like got rid of most of the rocks. I mean, they must have been really, really heavy because they couldn't even move some of them. But then it turned out this guy, Peter Iliff, had to pay thousands of dollars to have the rocks removed himself. He was ordered to by the city. So, the happy ending for once.
Comeuppance.
Yeah.
The best part was, though, when ABC7 did a story and it was, like, mysterious. Like, literally everybody knew.
Yeah,
it was, like,
what are all these rocks? Like, Stonehenge.
It said, like, mystery, like, six times. And it was, like, mysterious rocks.
Druidic cult that makes appearance.
It is a mystery,
Los
and
Angeles.
No one knows why. And everybody knew why. Like, you could just Google rocks under freeway and it was like their names.
I want to say, you know what I was actually doing? I was listening to an old episode for some reason. I forget why. And we were talking about how 200 people showed up to the city council meeting when they were refreshing 8502 for like the third or fourth time. And Scott said, right, we're seeing a turning point in how people respond to this stuff in LA. And that was true. There was, like, a few years ago, you wouldn't have Herb Wesson. You wouldn't have the volume of resistance to these rocks. People might not have even noticed at, like, a citywide level.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have, like, the level of outcry about them that would lead to Herb Wesson saying, I will personally lift each of these rocks and chuck them into the ocean.
Nothing. I mean, you can actually look at, for a similar example, I don't know if there have been rocks like this here. I know that that's happened in like San Francisco and other cities. But for a similar example, you can look at what happened a couple of years ago with Venice and those
planters.
Like planter boxes,
planter boxes,
right? There was nowhere near the level of outcry about that, and not like a hint of the city being forcing the Venice Stakeholders Association to remove those or whoever put those in. I think it was VSA.
Uplift Melrose. Boy, this was very whack. Uplift Melrose, we hadn't talked about it. It was a street redesign project, a really comprehensive one for Melrose. From Melrose Ave to Highland to Fairfax, about 1.3 miles. protected bike lanes on both sides, the first of that kind in the city, separated by actual like trees and like actually divided from cars in that way. It would have taken Melrose to one lane each way, expanded pedestrian space, more trees in the, you know, it always looks nice in the schematics, but it looked gorgeous. And it had a lot of support. It had support from both of the neighborhood councils in the area, lots of business groups. There were like lots of organizations in favor of this. And a lot of people worked very hard to make it happen.
And it would have been almost completely paid for through a Caltrans active transportation grant. So the money was also there.
Yes. I thought it was federal. It was state.
I think it was Caltrans.
Okay.
Right?
Yes. So the city did not have to pay for it at all. Yes, it was state. You're right. And actually, Councilmember Paul Koretz, who tends to be very resistant to projects like this, indicated that he would be in support of it. He's killed bike lanes on Westwood Boulevard and like all over his district in the past. But this one, because of the community support, seemed like he was in favor of it. And then 2 days ago, he just double tapped it, execution style, with...
Why does he have that authority? That will never... We will never be able to get anything done on this front when you have to like rely on the noblesse oblige of politicians like Paul Koretz, who is termed out and is running for a citywide election and presumably wants the ancient wealthy people in his district to pay for him to get a new office. And so, yeah, of course, he's going to give a middle finger to everybody who rides anything other than a car on Melrose. It's just crazy. Why does he have the ability to do this?
So a lot of the people you would expect were involved in killing this. One is the group Fix the City, which is a group of four, possibly five people who...
That's generous.
Mike Bonin came on our show and called Fuck the City. And Alyssa, you went on KCRW and listened to Steve Chiatakis ask Jim O'Sullivan, one of the people on the Fix the City.
No, it wasn't. Right. It was Jarrett Hill, a guest host. It wasn't even
Steve. Oh, that's
Steve.
Right. That's
it
right. That's right.
Jarrett Hill, yeah. Yes.
Asked where Kudos they get their funding, Jarrett. Which this group that cares more than anything about transparency in city government refused to say. Said that they didn't have to say the city knows, and so we don't have to share that with you. They were very prominently involved in killing this, as you would imagine. But also, the LAPD got involved as well, talking about that the bike lanes were unsafe in some way, and talking about how, saying that people simultaneously, as the argument always is, that the bike lanes are unsafe for cyclists to use, but also nobody uses them.
Yep.
And would cause cut through traffic in the quote nice neighborhoods around the around Melrose. This is an LAPD commanding officer talking about this, and also the fire department was worried that they couldn't turn. There were these big bump outs in the intersections, and they were worried that they couldn't turn the big fire truck around the bump outs. And the people, groups like Streets for All, who were supporting this, were like, we promise we will make sure that you can turn the big fire truck if you need to do this. Like, we'll figure it out, and we'll get rid of the, if it's just the bump outs being this big, we'll get rid of that. But it was never about the bump outs.
Of course not. This is as petty and ridiculous as it sounds. This is part of the political reaction to on the part of the LAPD. This is part of the political reaction to defund the police. Obviously, Paul Koretz is not an ally of Black Lives Matter or anything of the kind. But also, LAPD has made it, you might have noticed that as part of their concerted attacks on, in particular, Mike Bonin, they have made it a major talking point of the groups that tried to recall Mike Bonin for the road diets that he put in on the West Side, some of which I think he was actively involved in, and others he just declined to kill the way that Paul Koretz killed these. But they have made it a major part of their anti-Bonin campaign to say, you know, look at this lib who wants to take away your car space. The police are actively making plays for the type of people, Fix the City, et cetera, homeowners association, wealthy people within CD5 and citywide, who are more likely to be ideologically inclined in their favor. And I don't think that that's separable at all. I think that they are going to show up a lot more for these types of projects, more vocally opposed to them than they might have done otherwise, because they're more or less they are trying to throw their weight around as much as possible with city council these days.
So he's running for a citywide office now, one of three citywide offices, city controller. I cannot wait for the opportunity to vote against this person and to do everything I can. We were talking about, so this was the week that people first got to file for the 2022 racist friend of the show, Albert Corrado, has filed for CD13, but somebody has got to run for that controller position. It is Please. Important, and Paul Koretz must be expelled from public life. He cannot have another job at the city level. You just can't do it.
Yeah. No, can't let it happen.
Halloween.
Somebody who likes writing reports about money, run for controller, please.
I just wanted to pull one line from Paul Kretz's letter, which I really encourage you to go online as much as possible and find things that he has written about his climate stances in opposition to his infrastructural decisions that he makes for the city. And just one thing that struck me about this letter was that the corridor of Melrose is apparently economically depressed due to looting from the protests that happened in late May. If you have gone up and down Melrose, you can see that it's pretty much exactly like any other street in Los Angeles. There's no severe and long-lasting economic impacts of that because capitalism has healed almost uniformly along the corridor. But the other thing that I thought was really funny is that he really tried to make it seem like he was trying really hard to understand how this would work. And he said that he didn't think that it would get people out of their cars except for immediate neighbors on short trips who could already walk or bicycle. That's really the goal of the project, sure. He already admitted it would work, but he wanted to really give it one more shot to see if he could do it. And he said, "I have done much soul searching and even driven down Melrose one more time to try and envision the results. Many factors contribute to my decision not to move forward with this process." So he did. He gave it a try, you guys. He went. He drove down one more time.
One last drive.
One more time.
And he also said that he was unsure that enough public outreach had been done based on presumably the fact that people liked this project. So he decided to do sufficiently more outreach until he found enough people to be against it to give him an excuse to kill it. Halloween is canceled. Wait, no, okay, it's not like totally canceled, but like we don't recommend Halloween, which did they used to? Did the city used to have an official position on on trick-or-treating?
This was so confusing.
Janice Hahn is going to be like circulating those razor in the apple.
It's like COVID on your Tootsie Roll.
If you go trick-or-treating, just do so at your own
spray
risk.
Spray hand sanitizer. This was like such a confusing announcement too, because they, like, this always happens. So the county health department has its like noon presser or whatever, 12:30. And it gets picked up as national news that like LA cancels Halloween. And then like an hour or so later, they walk it back a little bit. And they're like, "That's not really what we said." Although that is basically
They said very explicitly that trick-or-treating was canceled.
It was the same thing as like any other, like the August, "We won't open until August" or whatever. Like all these announcements are always, they're like, we're just saying that.
Gavin Newsom in the Ashy Forest, he tweeted his support or announced his support of Prop 15, Schools and Communities First, an increase to the state property tax, or to the property tax for large commercial properties. Finally, all it took was the state becoming completely insolvent to get him to support this. And if it doesn't pass, we are at 100% doomed. So that was great that he did that. At the same time, came out against Prop 21, saying that he said a lot of things. Prop 21 is the bill that allows the ballot measure that would allow municipalities to expand rent control up to a point for residences older right. than 15 years and not single family homes and stuff like that. And Scott, what are your thoughts?
So the Prop 21, his statement on Prop 21 was that it was not what California needs right now. He said that he had the same concerns with it that he did with Prop 10 a couple yeah. years ago. I don't remember what his thoughts were at the time, because I don't think anybody really asks the lieutenant governor what his opinion is about anything.
I forgot but he was lieutenant governor. Like, who cares? Yeah, go on.
The other thing, though, that he said was that rent control, he was worried that it would depress housing production, which is pretty rich from a guy who said during his campaign that he was going to build 3.5 million new residences in the state, and since has completely lost his ability to speak on the subject. I mean, so like he's saying rent control is apparently a large threat to the ability to build new housing units in the state of California. Meanwhile, the state housing packages in Sacramento, it's like a fucking slaughterhouse. It is blood wall to wall. Nothing is making it out of the legislature unclipped. And Gavin Newsom, as far as I'm aware, doesn't have a word to say about that. So I am not really feeling his rejection of Prop 21.
It's like the doctors, they're like 1700s doctors that are like treating the condition by just like injecting you with like a bunch of heroin and draining all the blood out of your body. Yeah. And he also said at the same time, again, with all these things, it's like, this would hurt and we did it already. Like he says, yeah. This would be like a problem for landowners. And we also already passed the anti-rent gouging bill, which is significant. Like that was a big deal, but it still allows for 8% increases, which even the increases that are allowed in LA are way too much for people most of the time. They're way beyond inflation.
Yeah.
They're by definition beyond inflation, which is already often paces real wage increases.
Not to mention, Gavin Newsom is so dedicated ideologically to local control that he let cities and counties decide what their response was going to be to a deadly virus. Meanwhile, Prop 21 is a local control measure. It lets local governments determine how they want to implement rent control policies in within the bounds of their jurisdiction. And apparently that's not something that he cares to endorse.
Which LA wants to do. LA passed Prop 10. City of LA passed Prop 10. Mm-hmm. So if you want your compromise on this, just have Gavin Newsom say, like they've done with other ballot measures in the past to kill them. They say, like, I don't support this, but I support a version of it where, like, these municipalities are allowed to expand it. Like, come up with your great compromise. But instead, it's just like, no, good luck. Goodbye to our listeners. This, what horrors await this week, I dare not even predict.
As we're signing off, Donald Trump has just retweeted a video that the sheriff's department posted of the shooting in Compton, calling the sole visible shooter in that video the plural animals. So, we'll see what
this
we'll see
is.
What
I'm saying, we are in very, very big trouble, and we do not have the internal defenses at the city level to stop chaos from happening. I will say the only people that I like am mildly encouraged by right now are the Board of Supervisors, who are, I said mildly because Alyssa made a face, but like they have actually taken a stand on like against Sheriff Villanueva, and
that's true.
Like,
yes.
Like that's,
they have said something.
Yes.
Yes.
Outside of that, we are absolutely screwed. Like, I mean, I hate to end on this, but like, I am scared for what's coming this week, both from an environmental perspective, a just like local peace perspective. We are in for a potentially rough ride. We will be back next week on LA Podcast. Thank you for listening. Bye.